Jess on KMOX, a few minutes past 4 p.m., getting a little gloomy out there. Dave Murray said to expect storms, and they're already, you know, popping up around town, but to expect more widespread storms this evening and pretty much all day tomorrow, and then next week's just going to suck. It's like 95 degrees. Our buddy Steve Savard from Channel 5, he does special segments on Veterans Affairs, joins us now. Hey, Steve.
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
Doing well, man. Good to talk to you. So I thought about you on D-Day, and I never served, and so I've tried since I've been sentient to be as generous as I can with my time and my show and my money. We all do what we can do, but I'll never fill that gap. You know, you get it. But on D-Day, just watching various shows and Band of Brothers and things like that, and every now and then, it stops being about doing the right thing and supporting veterans, and it becomes very personal, and it really hits home to you. My dad was joined the Navy when he was 17 years old for World War II. 5'6", 120 pounds, soaking wet. Next thing you know, he's in the South Pacific. I don't know if I have that. You know what I mean? Like, these guys in the boats pulling up, you know, to Omaha Beach, and just all your buddies are getting shot. And I'll never know. I'll never know. But it gives me such a deeper, more visceral appreciation for veterans. Like, it's not all just, you know, brass bands and, you know, Star Spangled Banner. These men and women, my God, they were tested and they came through, and we just can't do enough.
Well, first of all, God bless your dad for enlisting at age 17 and wanting to help. I think I said this the last time we got together on your show. I said that I grew up with a healthy fascination of World War II specifically, a global conflict fought on multiple continents, the way we mobilized. And this is what I go back to all the time. What was asked of 17, 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old young men who haven't even figured out life yet, and how they delivered, and not just World War II, but in all the wars and all the conflicts. But, you know, we're talking about D-Day and World War II. It happens to be the largest amphibian invasion in military history. Up to 7,000 vessels, thousands of aircraft. It took unbelievable coordination, and it took unbelievable guts and guile, and I'm with you. I think often about, well, you know, I put myself to college on a football scholarship, and I turned myself into an NFL prospect. That didn't work out very well, but what I did, just so much pales in comparison to the time. You do what you do, and you think you're doing pretty well. But I always think back, what would life have been like when I was 18, 19, or 20, and I'm fighting the front lines of a war? And I just think World War II, we can't ever forget, and D-Day, every year it comes up. I think about my friend Ralph Goldsticker, who I was fortunate enough to tell Ralph's D-Day story about 7 years ago when I was working at Channel 4. He was a bombardier in a B-17 in the nose turret, and he talked so eloquently about being in the air on two missions that day, 14 and a half hours with his crew, and he was so humble and so modest. And so, yeah, I'm with you, Dave. D-Day is a big day. I think about, geez, how the world would have changed had Operation Overlord not been successful that day.
That's right. I really am looking forward to seeing the new movie Pressure about the meteorologist, you know, for D-Day. That looks really good.
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I've said often, if I could go back in history and have dinner and drinks with a handful of people who have passed and I never met, one of them would be Dwight Eisenhower.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be about his time as president. It would be about being commander of the Allied forces and everything he went through and the sleepless nights and all the letters and all the advice he sought out, knowing he was going to send tens of thousands of young men to their death. And he struggled with that decision. That's a guy that I would sit down with. Yeah. And I would love to have five hours or 4 hours and just pick his brain about what happened that day and the events leading up to it.
Yeah. And Steve, I know you know this, but Dwight Eisenhower wrote a letter in case it was a failure. And
yes,
taking full responsibility for every, I mean, that's a man right there. That's impressive.
one of the reasons I'd want to sit down and break bread with him, for sure.
Yeah. What are you working on most recently?
Well, tonight, we have a story tonight at 6. We air these at Thursday nights at 6. And tonight is a Vietnam veteran, John Freudel, who was identified as a potential leader in infantry training after he enlisted. He was in Vietnam in the late 60s and went to non-commissioned officer school, landed in Vietnam as a sergeant in charge of 17 to 25 men, and 10 and a half months into his combat tour, he gets a mortar explodes and shrapnel tears through his body, and he almost loses his arm. He goes through about 3 months of surgeries and rehab, and you know, like we've heard with many Vietnam veterans, PTSD set in, and there was really no diagnosis for it. He struggled all the way up until early 2000s. His oldest granddaughter, there was an assembly at school for veterans. He shows up, and he just decided that day to wear a Purple Heart, his Purple Heart, which he didn't do very often.
Yeah.
And he was singled out by whoever was conducting the, I guess it was the principal, the event. And he got a standing ovation. His daughter is pointing at him, saying, "That's my grandpa," bursting with pride, "That's my grandpa." And it changed his whole perspective, and it allowed him to start talking about it, opening things up. He's done. Now he talks all the time, and he actually wrote a book to help his healing, not for publication, a book about his service for his family.
Wow.
His father served, his uncle served, his grandpa served. They never talked about it, World War I or World War II. But he wants his family and the generations to follow to know what he did in Vietnam. And he gets very emotional in tonight's piece at 6 o'clock. And I just have a ton of respect for these veterans who were closed off for all these decades and now open themselves up and don't care about the emotion because they know it's good for them and it's probably good for other people to hear. It takes a lot of guts.
And it was so awful the way that Vietnam veterans were treated when they came back. You know, I mean, I know the social unrest at the time was understandable, but the way that they were treated, they were never thanked. They were never celebrated. It was obviously not the same kind of outcome as World War II, but that wasn't even really the point. I mean, they were people that were throwing like pig's blood on them and calling them all kinds of names when they didn't have any say over any of that stuff. They're in the middle of, you know, chaos.
No. Yeah, they don't want to be there. John says that he got a taste of it right away when he came back. One of his good friends said, "I'm glad you're home, but I don't want to hear any of your stupid war stories."
Wow.
Damn.
And yeah, and he said that kind of hit home, and he never talked about it because he talks about this in the piece tonight at 6 o'clock. He said, "I didn't want people to look at me and say, that guy's weird. What's wrong with that guy?"
Mm.
I mean, you know, imagine holding that in for 30 years, but it took an assembly and his granddaughter's pride
and
saying, "That's my grandpa."
That's great.
To kind of turn things around. And now here's the thing, to put it, it's great when you can say you have a little, you know, that these veterans now can turn things around and have a laugh at their own expense. His wife, Betty, tells me that John talks so much now that his nickname is for all his buddies, "Shut up, John."
That's great.
John's the guy that laughs the loudest when you say it, and he says it's true. It's absolutely true.
That's great. I'll be watching tonight. My dad died in 2002 at 76 of Alzheimer's, and the only good thing about that disease was my entire life, I would try to get my dad to talk about World War II, and he just wouldn't. And he'd say the classic World War II veteran thing. We all just did what we were called on to do. I was nothing special. But when he developed Alzheimer's, he didn't know anything about today, but he knew everything about 1942.
Mm.
And that's what he would talk about, and talk about being on the ship and his shipmates and talk about all these stories. And while I would have rather had my real dad there, not Alzheimer's dad, that was really something for me. And something I've always been thankful for is that I now have a pretty good idea of his experience. And it, you know, my dad was a difficult man, and he it was a difficult house. And it made a real difference for me to be able to go, okay, I'm going to give him some grace because I didn't go through that.
What a blessing for you to be, I mean, in a strange way, to be able to have that and to be able to connect some dots and maybe explain some things of why things played out the way they did in his post-war life. A lot of people from that generation, their father served. They never ever talked about it. The veteran went to his grave keeping it inside. And, you know, in a strange way, Alzheimer's at least helped you understand a little bit more about your father. I think that's great.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating thing, isn't it? Like the way that that goes. Because my grandfather was, my mom's father was in World War II, and he was on one of the bombers. And he had shrapnel on his leg. He had all these stories, and he never talked to anyone about it. But me, when I was 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
When I was a little guy, and we wouldn't sleep well at night because we're on vacation visiting and you're in a different place. He came in, and he would tell stories. And he would tell me these things when I'm a little kid. He died when I was 5 or 6. So he was telling me these things when I was really little. My grandmother never knew any of those stories. Hmm. My mom never knew them until I was an adult and started telling them about all these stories. And they were like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
He told you those things?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
After my dad passed, we found a bunch of his photos from World War II. And he was in, like I said, in the South Pacific and the islands. And we found one of him and one of his buddies wear nothing but grass skirts. We're like, ah, that's funny. And after like 18 more of those, I'm like, okay. I don't think Dad told me every story about World War II. But.
It's so interesting to hear all of you reference various veterans who don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Steve, my question for you is, how are you making your connections with these veterans
Great question.
Get them to sit down for these interviews? And if someone has a veteran in their life or they're a veteran and want to share their story, how can they get a hold of you and potentially be your next interview?
SSavard@KSDK.com. SSavard, S-S-A-V-A-R-D, at KSDK.com. I love any recommendations. I get word of mouth. I've had three of my last four veterans have gone ahead and said, you should meet my next friend. Mm-hmm. Wayne Kaufman, who runs the Kaufman Fund in town, former Vietnam veteran and does amazing things with his organization. Yeah. He's turned me on. I did a story on him back in March or February. He's given me three or four recommendations. I have my friends at Greater St. Louis Honor Flight, where I was fortunate enough to be on the board for 4 years. So it's just it's word of mouth, and it's making contact. I just had a conversation with a Vietnam veteran that I'm going to meet with next week. His story is that, you know, he was bitter, didn't want to go to Vietnam, was talked into going to be a guide, tour guide in Vietnam for a relative. He goes back and he meets a fellow. He hated the North Vietnamese. He meets a North Vietnamese former officer who was also wounded badly on the same day he was wounded, of all things. And they even exchanged a hug, and he said that kind of changed things for him. And now he does all kinds of work for the military. So they're just – these are fascinating stories. And, you know, fortunately we're at the point now where these veterans have now been opening up and talking about it. So they're okay with me telling their story, but I look forward to each and every one of these stories. No matter how dramatic or how undramatic combat may have been, everybody's service matters.
Steve, are you friends with Rocky Sickman, the former Iranian hostage?
I've never met Rocky, no.
Oh, I would
But as a kid, of course, I knew the story. It was a massive story at the
time. Yeah. He's a very good friend of mine. Please allow me next week to get a text between the three of us, and he would be happy to talk to you.
Oh, that would be my pleasure. Thank you, Dave.
Okay, awesome. Steve, I would do this every Thursday, man. Like, if you're available, I would love to highlight it every week.
I'm excellent with it. This is why I do it, to get people who deserve recognition and deserve our applause and our appreciation, get them some well-deserved publicity. So I'm all for it.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you next Thursday then.
Okay, that's good.
Welcome back, DGS on Camo X, 426. I'm going to say a bad word here. I've said it before on the show, but it's in context.
Who's Paul?
Tucker Carlson said on a podcast last night to the president directly, shut up, bitch.
Wow.
Yes. I thought the same thing. And I just wondered your guys' reaction, because I get it. I have thought things like that many times, but... As critical as I can be of the president on my show and in my personal life, that feels a bridge too far. It feels like you're kind of lowering yourself by saying those kind of things. Hmm. Or am I being Pollyannish?
I agree that he's lowering himself. However, it's not as if the president is respectful of other people.
Right.
So, I feel like if someone's upset, like, how dare you speak to the president like that? Like, so the president gets to speak to other people in extremely, he gets to call women pigs and, like, post videos.
Good points.
Depicting the former president as an ape and, you know, all of the horrible things that he's, and derogatory, you know, dancing on Rob Reiner's grave. Rob Reiner? Why did you even take time out of your day to comment on that? He is a nasty person. I'm not surprised when people say nasty things about him because that's what he's putting out into the world.
Yeah. I'm all about being meaner and nastier and tougher with our leaders because they're not doing what we need them to do. But I don't like that particular word. And there are others I wouldn't like either because you're dragging people into this that don't belong in this. Like, you don't need to insult someone by using a term for a woman. You know what I mean? Like, that's not an...
I mean,
you know,
anyone can be...
No, I get it. But, like, I think if you called him the D or if you called him something like that, I think it would ring better to me. And it's not about the tone. But also, I don't like it when guys like him, speaking of Tucker, who's just kind of like a big old weenie, who had a big part in jumping on that bandwagon 10 years ago, who had a big part in lying to the American public, right? We know what his text said. We know that his text messages from that lawsuit with Fox News, that he was bashing the president and he was calling him all kinds of names, said he's the worst thing to ever happen in the country, but then he'd go on camera and say the exact opposite. So, yeah, you should probably pipe down because you helped make this happen.